We are Two Guys Gaming. Hello and welcome. As always, even though the introduction says Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to The Dragon Republic, book number 2 from the Poppy War series by R.F. Kuang. I have no idea how long it's been. It's been at least a week, maybe a little bit over a week since the last episode, but that's better than the month or 2 months that I have been in between episodes for a while there, so things are improving. I hope to record the next episode tomorrow so that I can get 2 episodes out this week and then finish up the Poppy War by the end of June. Actually, the end of July. It's almost July. So finish up the Poppy War by the end of July, and then maybe I'll do the movie versus for Jurassic Park and do a couple of video reviews of the 2 comic book movies that are coming out, Fantastic Four and Superman, in July. I changed up the format a little bit last time around. I read each summary from supersummary.com for each chapter, and then I gave my thoughts after that. I like the free-flowing format a little bit better myself. Might not get as much from me because of it, but I think that I'm giving a more true version of myself there. Without any more introduction, this is The Dragon Republic, Chapters 6 through 10. Chapter 6. Nisha says his father, the dragon warlord, Vaisra, has a proposal for Rin. Vaisra wants Rin's help to overthrow Daji's empire and instate a republic. Vaisra thinks this is how Nikan can catch up to countries like the Federation and Hesperia. He points out the logical flaw in Rin's plan to assassinate Daji and work for Moog. He says he paid Moog for Rin's whereabouts and is sure Moog would have even sold the CK out to Daji. With his Hesperian-lent navy, he thinks the war could be over in 6 months. After discussing amongst themselves, the Tsika agree to join Vaisra. Nisha shows Rin around the ship and confesses he missed her. He says Vaisra bombed the Tsika's old ship, so Moog thinks they're dead. Rin asks Nisha to get Kite from Ankelun, and they retrieve Kite, bombing his house to fake his death. Kite is angry at his abduction. He does not believe in Vaisra's war. So I wrote, Rin, as expected, loses her shit when she learns about Nisha and that Moog betrayed her and would have betrayed the Sike most likely. She's also angry about Vaisra, and the Vaisra is running a plan counter to her own. She wants to assassinate. He wants a bloodless coup. So there's a little bit of tension there. Nisha twists the knife a little bit with her and Chagan and the quote-unquote battle for the top. Not that it's really a battle, but you know what I mean, where Chagan thinks that he should be in charge. A lot of people think that Chagan should be in charge. I think that Chagan should be in charge, but Rin is in charge for now because of what Althan said when he put her in charge. Nisha also tells a story of a farmer who ultimately affects the design of ships. She doesn't understand the story. Of course she doesn't, because she's Rin and she doesn't understand anything below the surface a lot of the time. But eventually she does get it and she apologizes to Nisha. Vaisra more or less corners her and manipulates her into helping. I mean, he talks about how Moog would have dimed them out. I don't think that he'll betray them, but he's definitely using the same tactics to manipulate Rin and get her on his side. Excuse me, the whole Kite versus Rin contrast there shows how two types of people react to war and PTSD. Some double down versus others find their humanity. Having dealt almost exclusively with the second version, I have to say that I appreciate that a lot more. That when you're sent to war, or that when you're asked to fight, you find your humanity and you realize that you're really fighting for... who are you fighting for? What are you fighting for? That type of thing, and it makes you a much more compassionate person, much more empathetic person, and a person that I would much rather deal with, frankly. Chapter 7. That night, Rin goes to the ship's physician for opium. When he says Vesra forbade him from giving her any, she goes to Vesra. He says the noise in her head that she wants to drown out isn't the phoenix, but her own guilt and fear. Vesra hits her and compares her to other Spearly who are quote-unquote smoking themselves to death. He thinks with discipline she can block the phoenix without opium. Rin goes through withdrawals. During the day, Nisha distracts her with stories and court gossip. The ship heads upstream on the Muri River. Along the banks, Rin sees thousands of refugees and is upset because she thought she brought peace to Nikon. That night, Rin's withdrawals are so intense that she tries to die by suicide. Suni, the quietest Sike member, stops her from jumping overboard. He calms her and reassures Rin of her inner strength. 5 days later, the ship sails through hundreds of floating corpses that were killed by the broken dam. Nisha thinks that Daji broke the dam, but Rin knows that it was Shagan and Kara who did it. Rin finds the twins and gloats because she is happy that she isn't the only who killed masses of people. 2 days later, Rin is over the worst of her withdrawals. She meets with Vesra, who seems proud of her. He gives her a present, Altan's trident, which his men found at Chulukorik. Later, she has lunch with Nisha. He asks about her withdrawals and the presence of the phoenix. She asks about Nisha's scars, which he acquired during his abduction. She has an impulse to caress them. Vesra is right. Rin is using the phoenix as an excuse to use opium to drown out her own guilt and trauma. She hasn't come to terms with it, obviously, because she uses it as a cudgel to beat the others with when she finds out about the people that died. And because she thinks that they judge her every time they bring up the phoenix and what she did. When she immolated the island, she lashes out against them and says, hey, look, you killed people too. So once again, it's, do you find your humanity or do you double down and just become a complete and total monster? Rin is obviously on the path of becoming a monster. Suni, when he saves Rin and soothes her, crosses a kindred spirit with her. I said that he was enabling her. I don't think that's true. Maybe he's just feels that the two of them have this bond together that they can use to help one another out. Rin is using Vesra as well. He's merely an ally of convenience so that she can get close to the Empress, and then she'll probably move in to kill her if she gets the chance, regardless of what Vesra wants. Vesra, I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing that all over the place. Rin and Nisha bond over their disfigurement, as it said at the end there. Rin asks about it, and they talk a little bit about it, and she has this want to caress the scars, to feel the scars, maybe to bond over the pain type thing. I sum this all up by saying basically nobody in this book has any kind of healthy relationship except for maybe Suni. Chapter 8. Rin trains with Captain Aridin to effectively fight Daji. Aridin says Daji manipulates desire, which makes her the strongest of the trifecta, surpassing the Dragon Emperor and Rin's old tutor, Zhang. Rin has trouble fighting with Altan's trident and is out of shape, but she uses a combination of distance fighting and controlled fire to best Aridin in a duel. Vesra's pride over her gives her more satisfaction than her previous reliance on opium. Vesra hopes to initiate a bloodless coup. He plans to bind Rin and take her as a prisoner to the Autumn Palace, sedating her with opium to convince Daji that he is not there to betray her. However, because of Rin's increased tolerance to opium, the dose will wear off sooner than expected, and she will be able to use fire to assassinate Daji. Kate insists that his father must be with Daji in Lusan. He sees a defense minister on shore and asks him about his father. The man tells Kate his father did not survive the war. Kate then gets an audience with Vesra and asks to be his chief strategist. Vesra knew earlier that Kate's father was dead, but he did not want to tell him. Vesra holds secret audiences with other warlords, trying to shore up alliances. He takes Rin with him to meet the snake warlord, Ankh Solin. Solin expresses pity towards Rin. He refuses to help Vesra, but says he won't turn him over to Daji. Vesra later tells Rin that Solin will join them if Vesra forces his hand by bringing the war to his province. None of the warlords have picked a side. Vesra calls Rin his quote-unquote greatest weapon and believes she'll win the war for him. So that part about manipulating his desire, it says something about true power comes from power over others and how you can manipulate and use them. It's normally a very shallow power that should be easily defeated. Con men either run out of victims or spread themselves too thin. Plus, beauty fades. Maybe not if you're supernaturally gifted. A demigod of beauty could potentially avoid all those pitfalls. So that was my thoughts there, that You know, you see these con men and con women who are able to use their looks and whatever other possible advantage they might have over people to manipulate them. But eventually, their beauty runs out or they run out of lies to tell people and they get caught. But it's not going to happen with this woman because she's, like I said, she's a demigod of beauty and can probably look that way forever, or at least very close to forever. Meanwhile, we see that Kate funnels his grief over his father into rage and vengeance. That tracks with all the terrible people in this series. Okay, maybe that's harsh. But you all know that when fiction becomes too real, I overreact, especially when things look as bad as they do right now. We will see where Kate's story takes him, and if he ends up being just as bad or worse than Rin. Chapter 9. The next day, Rin is drugged on opium and accompanies Vesra, posing as a prisoner. The Tsike place themselves in underground waterways, ready to rescue Rin and Vesra and bomb the Palace of Need. Rin initially fascinates the warlords, but they eventually leave her standing alone for hours while they squabble over the economy, politics, and agriculture. Some warlords were killed in the war, and there are new faces among them, like Cheng En, who leads the Horse Province. He is a bandit who has risen to power. Rin notices a power imbalance between the docketive northern warlords, who lost relatively little during the war, and the quiet southerners, who lost much more. After several hours, Daji declares a recess and walks with Rin. Daji shows Rin ruins left by the Hesperians at the beginning of the First Poppy War. She tells Rin that Vesra is using her and that she is fighting the wrong enemy. Her real enemy should be the Hesperians. Daji knows about Vesra's plans, but doesn't think the Nikara people will be able to handle democracy. Daji says what Shiro told Rin about Daji's betrayal was false. Rin isn't convinced, believing Daji is too weak to unite the country and the warlords. Daji promises that she can help Rin control her god's power. Rin attacks Daji, but Daji easily gets the best of her. She sends them into the spirit plane, giving Rin hallucinations. Trigon finds his way into the illusion and saves Rin. He creates a diversion and they run, but Rin goes back for Vesra. Suni carries an injured Vesra to the ship. One of the things I wrote down here was they talked about the beauty of the palace, but then rotten to the core. Pretty thinly veiled metaphor, again. She was 19, early 20s when she wrote this book, so it's not going to be perfect, but I thought that was an apt metaphor, even if it was a little obvious. Daji, just like everybody else in Rin's life, is easily manipulating her. I would expect no less, as the experience level between the two of them is massive. Like Kate, Rin is using a cudgel, parenthetically and not very effectively, in parenthetical, against a skilled opponent who wields a scalpel. Plus, Rin's god fucks with her too. It's going to be a painful growth process for that girl. Vesra also underestimates Daji's experience and leadership. He really thought that his plan to use Rin as a decoy would work? Truly, those idiots deserve each other. You know it's bad when I'm rooting for the ruthless dictator over the supposed protagonists and those fighting against the tyranny. Like, they're just so dumb, and they're just so obvious with what they do, and it's not going to work against Daji, so they need to figure it out if they're ever going to defeat this woman and try to bring some sort of semblance of sanity to the region. Chapter 10. On board, Chagan is disturbed that Daji, a shaman, seems so quote-unquote stable. Vesra wakes and asks to see Rin. He asks her why she saved him and remained in his army. Rin thinks about how Vesra's pride in her and his approval of her gives her reasons to live. However, she doesn't say this. Instead, she tells him that she's always been a soldier and knows nothing else. Vesra emphasizes that no one with her power can remain neutral in war, and she must use her power to help. So once again, we get Rin, who finds praise addictive. Also, she sees use in Vesra against Daji. She's only using people to her own ends, ultimately. So, you know, the fact that other people use her, whatever. Because she obviously also has weaknesses to exploit, and it's just a fucked up situation overall. So, Chagan is deeply concerned about the stability of Daji. Like, all of these shamans end up losing their crap when they get too close to their god, because they can't control the power, and the god eventually consumes them. And they die because of it, but Daji has been able to, if not consume the god, then at least work very closely with the god to keep her sanity and stability in the face of all of this. And as they said, that makes her a very dangerous opponent indeed. She dispatches a Ren, no problem. And same with Vesra. This is going to be a sticky situation for a while. And, I mean, they'll eventually come out on top, but things are going to get bad. Much, much bad. Much, much worse before they get better, I think. So, I like the introduction. These chapters serve to start to build some of the relationships between the characters, and even though I don't like the characters very much, I do like the interaction between them, and I like being able to take that apart and put my own little spin on what's happening, and even come away with some hope that somebody somewhere, one of the good people, is going to eventually take charge and lead this band of assholes to something better. Like I say, I think that Daji is just going to toy with them for a while, you know, make them think that they have a chance. Usually that's what these quote-unquote bad guys do in these books, is that they toy with them far too long, and then before you know it, the protagonists have figured things out and they end up winning in the end. So I'm sure that's what's going to happen going forward. I look forward to seeing how it happens, though, like I say, because I do like the interaction between the characters, even if I don't particularly care for many of the characters in the book. And I look forward to continue reading and continuing to bring you this series. Like I say, I'll record or try to record tomorrow. I might only have time to do some YouTube, but at the very least, I'll take some notes and I'll get ready to record tomorrow so that I can get a couple episodes out this week. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I've only been doing about one article a week. I think I'm going to do comic reviews again this week, because those got pushed back from last week. So that'll be the next article that goes up, some sort of comic review. I'm changing the way that I do my reviews, too, so we'll see if that works on YouTube. Those should be up. Guess multiple ones this week at some point. I think tomorrow I'm going to do Spawn and maybe record the DC books. Yeah. And then I have Ultimate, X-Books, and Marvel as well to do. I split them up into 5 different sections this month. But those should be up this week. I think that's it. Oh, I have TikTok, NewDad76. Pretty active on there. I was in jail for one post, I think, because I insulted their precious ad revenue, but I've been doing well again the last couple of videos that I've posted, getting up, you know, 600-700 views and 30-40 likes. So you can check me out there, follow me, like, comment, all that good stuff. I will be back with this series at some point this week. Talk to you then. Bye, guys.